angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.'" So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." I've always loved this passage from Nick Hornby's book, Fever Pitch. It's a song about football. It's a song. It's a book about football supporters, which probably won't interest you. And he recalls how as a young lad, he and his friend called Frog, saw a Crystal Palace supporter who had died of a heart attack on his way home from a game. This left a huge impression with him. Now that he's older, he's worrying, he's thinking about that poor man who died on his way home from the football match. And this is what Nick Hornby writes about dying. "It worries me, the prospect of dying in mid-season like that. Of course, in all probability, I will die sometime between August and May. We have the naive expectation that when we go, we won't be leaving any loose ends lying around. We'll have made our peace with our children, left them happy and stable, and we will have achieved more or less everything that we wanted to with our lives. It's all nonsense, of course, and football fans contemplating their own mortality know that it's all nonsense. There'll be hundreds of loose ends. Maybe we'll die the night before our team appears at Wembley, or the day after a European Cup first leg match, or in the middle of a promotion campaign or a relegation battle. And there is every prospect, according to many theories about the afterlife, that we will not be able to discover the eventual outcome. The whole point about death, metaphorically speaking, is that it is almost bound to occur before the major trophies have been awarded. The man lying on the pavement would not, as Frog observed on the way home, discover whether Palace stayed up or not that season, nor that they would continue to bob up and down between the divisions over the next 20 years, that they would change their colours half a dozen times, that they would eventually reach their first FA Cup final, or they would end up running around with the legend Virgin plastered all over their shirts. That's life, though. We all die mid-season. We all die not knowing what comes after. Gerard Kelly has a poem. "The trouble with reality is that if you miss it, there's no omnibus edition to help you catch up. The trouble with reality is you can't video it while you're out at the pub and fast forward through the highlights over a hot cup of cocoa. The trouble with reality is that when your friends die, they don't pop back in the next series and tell you it was all a bad dream. The trouble with reality is that the casting director never consults you before choosing the people next door. The trouble with reality is that it's easier to watch neighbours than to be one. The trouble with reality, dying halfway through the mid-season." And into all of that, Jesus rises from the dead. Isn't that fantastic? In the middle of it all, Jesus comes back from the tomb. Jesus comes back and is alive and talks to us. And suddenly, you know what's going to happen at the end. Suddenly, you've opened a door to the end of time, which is, it ends with Jesus. I'm just fascinated by this story. And I tell you, the thing that's always I've most been fascinated by in the resurrection story, it's this. The angel. you know, I'm kind of half obsessed with angels and never really understand them and find them curious creatures. But this angel appears, right? And the angel rolls the stone away. How about that? An angel comes to roll the stone away. And then what does he do? I love this. He sits on it. How cute is that? He rolls the stone away and sits down on it. He crosses his arms. The rest is speculation. But here you've got the angel rolling the stone away and sitting on it. Now, the purpose of stones is not to stop people getting out of graves. Okay, let's get this clear. Stones are not put there to stop the dead getting out. They're to stop the living getting in. The great lump of rock wasn't there to stop Jesus getting out. It was to stop people getting in who weren't supposed to. And yet, you know, to me, my thinking, that great lump of rock, that stone, it must have been mighty big. And that to me is the centre of the story. It's so physical, isn't it? Great lump of rock. I mean, the tomb and the clothes and the bodies. It's kind of like sort of on the, it's not so tangible, but a great lump of rock at the heart of the story. It's a great lump of rock. Angel rolls it away and then sits on it. The sheer physicality of it. It was obviously very large because all the Gospels mention this great slab of rock, great lump of rock. And it's all surreal, so physical, you know. And it's just that reality that just, I like to think about that rock every Easter, you know. Because there's something so real about that grave. The empty grave, that's what's real about it. Bishop Eusebius was the favourite bishop of the Emperor Constantine. And one day Emperor Constantine decided it would be a very good idea to go and find the empty tomb of Jesus. So he sent Eusebius to Jerusalem to find the empty tomb of Jesus. Now that tomb had been buried for about 300 years. Because when Jerusalem was sacked by the Romans, about 250 years before, everything was just piled on top of everything else. And when they rebuilt Jerusalem, they built it on top of the rubble. And then when you came to knock a house down, you didn't cart the rubbish away. You flattened it. You flattened the old house and leveled it and built the new house on top. So the streets of Jerusalem were constantly rising, you know. And then people would throw rubbish into the streets and the streets would get higher. Then you'd have to build your house higher so the rain didn't run into it when it rained. So ancient cities just grew over the decades. And so they got higher and higher as the decades passed. So the tomb of Jesus was buried right underneath all that. But the Christians had always lived there. And the Christians, even in times of persecution, Christians had been living in Jerusalem. And they bore with them a memory of where the different places were under all the rubble. And in there, they pointed to the suburb where they said, the tomb of Jesus is under that. We've known this for hundreds of years. The tomb of Jesus is under that. So Eusebius gets digging, and he digs down, and they dig down, and they dig into a graveyard. And they say, this is the graveyard where Jesus was buried, and they find a tomb, and for some reason they say, this is the tomb, the empty tomb of Jesus. What's interesting is that we know from the position of that graveyard that at the time Jesus died, it was outside the walls of Jerusalem. But 7 years later, they moved the walls of Jerusalem out. So that graveyard became part of Jerusalem, and you were not allowed to bury anyone inside the walls of Jerusalem. So it stopped being used in AD 40, that graveyard. We know for a fact it stopped being used in AD 40. So whether or not it was the graveyard of Jesus, I don't know. But to me, it's quite a strong reasoning behind it. That Eusebius probably did find the graveyard where Jesus was buried. I love that. I love that. I just wish he'd found a great big stone as well. A stone that's just such a part of the story. That's lost in history. But the stone's there, and we've got the angel sitting on it. Isn't that cute? And what does the angel do? He rolls a stone away, and then he sits on it, and then he waits. Oh, I just love this idea of the waiting angel, just sitting there. What's he doing? The guards have run away. What's he doing? Is he whistling to himself? Keep himself amused? Did he take on the mouth organ? A Sudoku? Maybe he whittled. I don't know what the angel did. Just sits there waiting for people to come. Isn't it? I just love this image. Angel waiting. Jesus is risen. And the angel knows that. He's just waiting for the people to arrive. These silly human beings to arrive. What do they know? And already the course of history is changing. In my original notes, I wrote that a ripple is being sent out through the space-time continuum. But that's nonsense. It's more of a tidal wave, isn't it? It's a tsunami. Whoa! Wow! Just about to swamp the whole of the history of the human race. And it's begun right there with the angel sitting on the stone outside the tomb, whistling away to himself. Passing the time until the people get there. Meanwhile, you know, this great tidal wave is going to change people's lives for hundreds of years. I have a science degree. Science is kind of almost out of date in our postmodern society, isn't it? Everyone's truth is their own, it says. So you have your truth, I have my truth. John has his truth, Fred has his truth, and we don't need to argue about it, because it doesn't matter what you believe. If it's true for you, that's fine. Doesn't it work that way in science? Scientific theories have to be proved and tested against reality. No scientific theory is accepted until it can be repeated in somebody else's laboratory. And I find it interesting that those who say truth is just relative to you still use machinery and wristwatches and everything that's all based on science, on proving that if you do something such and such a bit of electronic material, it will produce something else. And it's all, modern world is all based on scientific study and scientific theory. But there's some things in science, you know, you can't actually measure because they happened a long time ago. The creation of the universe, we can't study the creation of the universe because it was, I don't know how long ago, a long time ago. So scientists don't study the creation of the universe directly. They study indirectly. They see what's happening in our world, in our universe today. And they see the effects of the creation of the universe. And by the ripples that are still being sent throughout our universe, they can follow them back to see what happened originally. Now, the resurrection is that kind of event. I mean, it has at its heart a great big lump of rock with the angel sitting on it, which is lovely and physical. But if you want to study, I can't show you the rock. I may or may not be able to take you to Jerusalem to show the actual tomb of Jesus. I don't know if it is the tomb. Take you close to it, that's for sure. But the resurrection is like the creation of the universe. It ripples throhout history. It changes history. It changes lives. So if you want to study the resurrection, the best thing you can do is to invite Jesus into your heart today and see what he does in your own heart, in your own life. If you want to prove that Jesus rose from the dead, you can go to the biblical accounts and they make sense. They hang together. There were 500 people who saw Jesus in one go. People who'd been fearful and trembling and worried and anxious. And now they've been changed. They went out and they changed the world and many of them died for their faith. They were convinced enough that Jesus had appeared to them to go and die for it. And that's pretty convincing proof. But ultimately, the final way to prove it is to see if it works. If Jesus is alive, then he's going to touch my life if I invite him into it. That's the only way ultimately you can prove the resurrection. See the difference following Jesus makes in your own life. There's nothing wrong in that. Scientists do it all the time in their laboratories, study the effects of an event to see what happened originally. Oh, what's going on under the Swiss mountain, under the CRN, this great big machine they've got going, you know. You measure everything by seeing. You can't actually see what's happening, but you see the effects of it. And the effects of it is what scientists measure. Scientists do it all the time. So be scientific about your faith. Invite Jesus into your heart and see what difference it makes. It's the only way you can do it, ultimately. Nothing wrong in that. Humans, scientists, the top scientists in the world do it all the time. And the angel, in a sense, is figuratively still waiting for us if we haven't done that. The angel is kind of still waiting on us and saying, guys, look, take a look into Jesus. He's going to change you. And then the angel rolls the stone away, sits on it, he waits, and when people arrive, he invites everyone to take a look. Come and see yourself. Jesus has risen from the dead. This is not a metaphor. Jesus physically rose from the dead. Bishop Tom Wright, a couple of Easters ago, as he says, made the mistake of reading the Murdoch Press in Holy Week. On Good Friday, he said it's not a good idea to do, but he read the Times. And he said its leader was called Universal Truths, suggesting that Easter message is one that everyone can sign up to. And Tom Wright is smelling a rat at this point. It commemorates sacrifice, the giving of oneself as a martyr for the love of others. So Easter is the achievement of victory through suffering. These, the writer goes on, are universal spiritual truths. And the more interaction acquaints those of different faiths with the beliefs of others, the clearer is the common acceptance of these truths. So it concludes, the Easter message draws the devout together, it means the devout of all religions, presumably. From suffering, goodness can triumph. Death is not final. And then, as Tom Wright calls it, a grand and woefully misleading last sentence. That is what all faiths in Britain can proclaim and where they can come together this weekend. And isn't that missing the point entirely? Easter is not a metaphor about good overcoming evil, although such metaphors are fine. Easter is about a great chunk of rock with an angel sitting on top of it. Nothing metaphorical about that. He's there waiting for people to arrive to show him the empty tomb and saying, Jesus has risen. Nothing metaphorical whatsoever about it. A while back I came across this poem by John Updike, who's saying the same thing. There's nothing metaphorical about Easter. Jesus rose from the dead indeed. And it's called Seven Stanzas at Easter. Perhaps you've read it or have heard it. Make no mistake, if he rose at all, it was as his body. If the cell's dissolution did not reverse, the molecules re-knit, the amino acids rekindle, the church will fall. It was not as the flowers, each soft spring recurrence. It was not as his spirit in the mouths and fuddled eyes of the 11 apostles. It was as his flesh, ours. The same hinged thumbs and toes, the same valved heart that pierced, died, withered, paused, and then regathered out of enduring might new strength to enclose. Let us not mock God with metaphor, analogy, sidestepping, transcendence, making of the event a parable, a sign painted in the faded credulity of earlier ages. Let us walk through the door. The stone is rolled back, not papier-mâché, not a stone in a story, but the vast rock of materiality that in the slow grinding of time will eclipse for each of us the wide light of day. And if we will have an angel at the tomb, make it a real angel, weighty with Max Planck's quanta, vivid with hair, a pig in the dawn lights, robed in real linen, spun on a definite loom. Let us not seek to make it less monstrous for our own convenience, our own sense of beauty, lest awakened in one unthinkable hour, we are embarrassed by the miracle and crushed by remonstrance. I hope you follow that. It's not a metaphor. It's real. The rock was real. The angel sat on a real rock. and waited for real people to see the real empty tomb and go out and meet the real risen Saviour. There's nothing more real and more solid than Easter Sunday. And yes, as Nick Hornby said, we're all going to die mid-season. We're all going to leave loose ends. We're all going to leave unfinished business. Because that's what dying's about. But listen, there's an empty tomb there that tells us that is not the end. That is just a new beginning. Because Christ has risen from the dead.